Welcome to another edition of San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley. Without further ado, enjoy the program.
Living historian Kurt Skinner brings the life and times of the 26th President of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt, to life. His goal in the persona of Teddy Roosevelt is to engage, entertain, and enlighten audiences and to remind us, speaking Roosevelt's own words, what has always been great about Teddy Roosevelt's America. Drawing from his lifetime of experience as a retired military officer and high school history teacher, Kurt's reenactments are a delight to experience for young and old alike. Kurt's reenactments are available for patriotic events and military, veteran, or fraternal groups, museums, libraries, and historical societies, leadership and motivational speaking, fundraising and promotional events, state and national parks, or nature and conservancy organizations, tourism and conventions, meet and greets, and even more. He especially loves talking to young people, just learning the history of our nation. Outside of this podcast, you can learn more about Kurt, his reprisor role, and more at TeddyRooseveltsAmerica.com. That's TeddyRooseveltsAmerica.com. While he was here as the keynote speaker for the 2020 Monta Vista Crane Festival, SL Voices had the good fortune to sit down with Kurt, hear his story, find out his passion for Teddy Roosevelt's history, and even take in his reenactment downtown.
I'm Adam, and if you were ever curious about Theodore Roosevelt, keep listening. Joining us in the SL Voices studio is reenactor, living historian, repriser. Actually, he goes just by Mr. Kurt Skinner. Kurt, welcome to the studio, sir.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
Well, we appreciate you coming, and let's get your story first. Where are you originally from, sir?
Originally from Kansas, Topeka, Kansas. Joined the Air Force out of high school and ended up being stationed right up the road in Lowry in Denver. That was my first time living in Colorado, I guess. Colorado's the vacation spot for a lot of Kansans.
Yes, it is.
My early experience with Colorado was coming hiking up Pikes Peak as a little kid.
Ah.
That was great fun. But it was good to, I was able to join the Air Force and see Europe in the waning days of the Cold War and got to be stationed in England and later Germany right before the wall came down.
Where in Germany were you?
It was a Wiesbaden, which is a town of about 1/3 of a million people and away from most of the American GIs. And so almost felt as if we were living in Germany amongst the Germans, which was kind of a neat experience.
I wasn't far away. I was stationed in Schweinfurt.
Schweinfurt, yes.
And also that same time, just pre-fall of the Berlin Wall.
Good time to be in Germany.
It really was.
So I just did the 4 years in the Air Force and got out and got married to my high school sweetheart, Trudy, who you met this weekend. And went back to school at University of Kansas and majored in history and political science and had a lot of great professors while I was there. One of them was Stephen Ambrose, was there visiting, you know, of Band of Brothers fame. And It was a pretty neat opportunity to sit under this very public historian. It introduced me to Lewis and Clark, for example. He was in the midst of writing Undaunted Courage at the moment that he was teaching that course and got me thinking about Lewis and Clark. And Meriwether Lewis was actually one of the first persons that I was stepped into that role as Meriwether Lewis during the bicentennial. It was great fun.
Where did you end up from there?
From there, we lived in Salt Lake City for a short while. I ended up going back into the Air Force and space and missiles and ICBMs. And so,
ooh, high-tech stuff.
Well, yeah, for an historian, it was. But I always explain there's some really smart people who engineered systems that allows humanities people like me to be able to operate them. So we are off to California, and we had started our family and had a baby while we're out in Vandenberg, and then we're off to Minot, North Dakota to do 4 years in up in northern North Dakota.
What is in Minot, North Dakota?
A lot of nuclear weapons, as it turns out. So you've got two nuclear wings there. You've got a flying wing, and you have the missileers, the ICBMs, and that's what I was stationed in. I rejoined the Air Force to see the world and pretty much stayed in the Western U.S. for the rest of my career.
Well, we're going to touch on Minot a little bit later on, too. What do you do in your off time? Hobbies? Special interests?
I used to be a competitive long-distance runner, and that's what most of our family, that's been our background. But now we enjoy hiking. We enjoy camping. We get out whenever we can to do that. Reading and studying. And now Roosevelt has kind of become my avocation, my hobby, my passion. So this has taken up,
a lot of time.
A considerable amount of my, quote, free time now.
Well, I understand. You have to hone your craft.
Exactly.
You really do. And so let's touch on that. You are actually a living historian, a reenactor, and you cover the 26th president of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt, through reenactments. How and why did you start doing this in the first place?
Well, I think like so many American kids, you're exposed to Theodore Roosevelt and you get just a handful of impressions of what Roosevelt was about and stood for. This was pre-Night at the Museum, so I wasn't exposed to Roosevelt as a kid through the movies. It was actually our time in Minot, North Dakota, stationed at a missile wing that I caught the bug for Theodore Roosevelt.
I understand it was aptly named, too.
It was. We were the Rough Riders. So we
imagine that.
Had the Badlands tie in there to Theodore Roosevelt's time in North Dakota.
Well, how long have you been doing these reenactments?
Only actively for the last couple of years. He's been a person of study probably for the last 20-some years of my life, but I think maybe I've started to thicken up enough and grow out a mustache and decided now is the time.
Can you tailor your presentation for different groups?
I do, certainly. So rather than just having one stage production that of a memorized script and then just present that same thing over and over and over for every group, I think as an historian, as somebody who wants to get the story right and be true to Roosevelt, I don't know that this life story can be told in a 45-minute stage show. And so if I know that there is a particular interest of the group that I'll be speaking towards, then I'll do some specialized study leading up to that event and try to drill into some of the details that'll be meaningful to that group. You know, Roosevelt has so many facets to his life and his personality that you could come up with dozens of tailored shows that speak just to one facet of his amazing, diverse life.
What types of groups do you typically speak in front of?
I think I'll speak in front of nearly anybody who would have me. You know, patriotic groups, fraternal groups and organizations, school groups, kids, particularly fourth graders. It's a great target audience because of our Kids in the Park. Our government has a Kids Outdoors, Kids in the Park program that gives a free federal lands pass to all fourth graders and their families for that year. A lot of teachers already know about the program, but for those who don't, I love introducing elementary age kids to Theodore Roosevelt and telling them about how the parks belong to them as American citizens, and they don't have to wait to grow up to become adult citizens to start to embrace conservation as part of their citizenship. Love talking with kids groups. But any local organization that wants to bring in a person of historical interest, Theodore Roosevelt appeals to people across a really broad spectrum, across the political spectrum, across any number of interests. A presentation can be tailored.
And your contact information, if somebody is interested, will be, of course, on this podcast page. They can reference that and reach out to you.
TeddyRooseveltsAmerica.com.
There you go. Tell me about one of the most notable groups you ever gave a presentation to.
Probably most notable might be one of the first presentations I had an opportunity to talk to a camporee of scouts down in southern New Mexico. It was a Teddy Roosevelt-themed camporee. I had the chance to be Teddy Roosevelt and a themed weekend, and that was tremendous fun, and spoke to about 200 scouts and scout leaders down there. Afterwards, I was surprised with the opportunity as Theodore Roosevelt to judge the Rough Rider Chili Cook-Off.
Ooh.
So, which meant, I didn't understand this at the time, but it meant going around to about 18 different troops and having a bowl of each one of their chilies.
Wow, that's
so
great.
That was a rough ride back to Colorado.
Pun intended, right? Kurt, let's take a break and hear a little bit from your reenactment. You performed here in Monta Vista at the Valley 3 Theater for the Monta Vista Crane Festival 2020. Your presentation was called I So Declare It, which you reiterated several times throughout the presentation. It was great. First of all, give me a little background into your reenactment here and why you think this part's so important.
It was that first time that a president used that executive authority that wasn't expressly written into the Constitution. And this is where Roosevelt is described kind of as one of our first modern presidents because he grows the role of president beyond just that which was specified as duties that he could do within the Constitution. And he began to think in broader terms, well, if it doesn't say that I can't do it, then it must imply that I can. So the I So Declare It moment in the creation of Pelican Island as the first federal bird sanctuary, it just opened the door it opened his eyes. Well, if I can do it here, then I can do it elsewhere, and led to the creation of, during his administration, 51 federal bird sanctuaries, and laid the basis for the modern wildlife refuge system. Now there's over 500 national wildlife refuges across America. Roosevelt understood, being a bird person himself, he understood that it wasn't enough to just set aside a couple of isolated refuges, that it needs to be a string of refuges for these migratory patterns of the birds. So it's why it's so critically important to string together numbers of wildlife refuges to have safe places as they migrate through our nation.
All right, let's give that a listen.
A duty of citizenship, I believe, is to be a conservationist. And one of my first opportunities to exercise this political power came to my friend Frank Chapman, who was the head ornithologist of the American Museum of Natural History, which, by the way, my father was a co-founder and one of the board members. Its charter was actually signed in the living room of my home in New York City when I was a boy. Mr. Frank Chapman, head ornithologist, a good friend of mine, and a goodly number of the Audubon Society members of Florida started deluging my office with these letters telling me that, Mr. President, for yet another year, millions of migratory fowl in Florida are to be slaughtered by these game butchers, and their little youngins will starve to death unless something can be done. So I brought together my legal team, my Attorney General, Mr. Philander Knox, and I asked him, is there anything in the Constitution, in all the laws of America, which would prevent me from naming Pelican Island, which was this last stopover on the migratory route on the Atlantic seaboard for the brown pelican, is there anything which would prohibit me from naming this a federal bird sanctuary? And he hemmed and hawed and finally came back to me and said, no, sir, Mr. President, I don't believe that there is anything prohibiting you from doing so. I said, so, there we have it. Pelican Island is hereby a federal bird sanctuary. I so declare it. Thank you. Yes. Holy cross. And that became the first of 51 federal bird sanctuaries that I set aside during my time as president, which, as you probably know, this is an educated audience here, as you know, it becomes the basis of the wildlife refuge system now today managed by our U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
We're back talking with reenactor Kurt Skinner. Kurt, I understand you met the great-grandson of Teddy Roosevelt by the name of Tweed Roosevelt while you were in the military. What was it about this meeting that had so much impact on you?
As an historian, meeting the great grandson of a former president and, you know, the namesake for our unit's mascot, you know, the Rough Riders, it was that personal connection. Tweed Roosevelt is a very interesting, colorful character. He's the head of the Theodore Roosevelt Association, this group that was formed right after Roosevelt's death in 1919 to perpetuate his memory. Just meeting this blood relative who was such an outspoken advocate for the memory of his great-grandfather, Theodore Roosevelt, being able to interact with him and see him for the weekend that he was there for this 100th anniversary that we were commemorating, the 100th anniversary of the storming of in Cuba and that charge up San Juan Hill. And he just brought it to life for me, and it was a spark. There was a trivia contest that our unit was having to see who knew the most about Theodore Roosevelt. So I immediately went to the library and grabbed all the books off the shelves about Theodore Roosevelt and quickly started cramming. And
that's why you won. Nobody else had that reference material.
Exactly. Marshal all the resources.
A smart move.
That started a more in-depth, scholarly life of research about Theodore Roosevelt. And the more that I learned about this man, the more intrigued I became about his life. And I just fell in love with his honesty and his sense of integrity. There were many people who politically were opposed to what Roosevelt was trying to achieve, but nobody ever accused him of being two-faced or being a liar. It was a president of integrity that I think all Americans long for, a president not that just that they agree with in political values, but somebody that you respect as a man.
I understand that. So this would be why you strive so hard in your reenactments to be as realistic as possible?
It is. You know, as an historian, I hope my own students in the classroom would appreciate the fact that I want to get it right as history, and I don't want to perpetuate false ideas that can spring up, and I want to be true to the character of this man that I respect so much. And this is my attempt to try to honor this man, that I want to perpetuate the things that he was trying to do for America, particularly in the areas of conservation.
What were some of Teddy Roosevelt's most notable accomplishments?
I think he always touted the building of the Panama Canal as one of the great achievements during his administration. Obviously, it didn't get finished before his time as president ran out, but he did leave the country to go, quote, supervise. He wanted to see the ongoing construction in Panama of the canal. He was criticized, of course, by Congress for leaving the country. It was the first time an American president ever left the United States while president.
He had a lot of notable firsts, didn't he?
He did, and some detractors in Congress. Even more than what he did for conservation, I think he considered that a pretty great achievement. He brokered the peace negotiation between Russia and Japan in a pretty nasty war that was really one of the first industrialized wars right before World War I, and ended up winning the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts in that. I think some people have forgotten that. He never wanted people to forget Cuba and his time in the Spanish-American War, and Americans never did. Later in life, he preferred his title that he earned as Colonel of the Rough Riders, and it was the title that he preferred to be called for the rest of his life. His accomplishments in what America was able to do in the Spanish-American War, he believed in what we were doing and believed that the cause was just, and that we needed to rid the Western Hemisphere of the last vestige of European colonialism, and so he believed it was just.
Is there one particular thing that stands out as his most notable accomplishment other than the teddy bear?
Other than the teddy bear. I think right now, especially as Americans, whether it's global warming or what the issues are, I think Americans are becoming more conscientious of climate and ecology, and the fact that Roosevelt, as president, seemed to grasp and understand what we would call ecology and the need for all of our ecosystem to be in balance. And he seemed to understand that so much earlier than most Americans. And I think you can rightfully say that he was this father of much of the modern conservation movement. Not a preservationist, but conservation. He believed in the best use for the most people for the longest period of time, and we should conserve these resources to make them last for our children and our children's children and generations of Americans yet unborn. It was a really common phrase that he used to try to get Americans to understand that these resources are inexhaustible. We have been entrusted as stewards for a short while on this planet, and these are our heirlooms that future generations deserve to inherit, at least as good as we've found them. To me, that is one of the things I think that all Americans should be able to embrace as something we all commonly should respect about it.
What you said is it's just a finite amount of these resources.
He equated the loss of a species, such as the passenger pigeon or the Carolina parakeet or any number of species that go extinct, he said it felt like a personal loss, the loss of a good friend or family member. And he put it in terms of, it is as if all of the works of one of our great classical writers have vanished, or a whole gallery of the great artists of the classical period are just gone, and they can never be replaced.
Wow, a bit profound. I like that. What is your primary goal, Kurt, in the presentations or reenactments that you do for Theodore Roosevelt?
Well, any given presentation, you have a finite amount of time to try to get across the true character of this man that lived several lifetimes worth of achievements and lives within one 60-year span. And so again, you can never capture everything in this man's life. You can't encapsulate all 60 years of his achievements. Again, that's where I think as an historian trying to be true to his story, and yet also be relevant to the audience, you know, trying to know the audience, to try to tailor a presentation, as I tried to do here at Monte Vistas, focusing particularly on conservation and the National Wildlife Refuge System, and that pinnacle moment of the ISO declarate of the beginnings of using executive orders to create these conservation safe havens.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head several times throughout the presentation. There were several points you had to stop while the whole audience was applauding. We're going to take another break here to hear a little bit more from your reenactment performed again at the Valley Through Theater here in Monte Vista for the Monte Vista Crane Festival. What is the story behind this particular part? And this is about the teddy bears being named after Theodore Roosevelt. Why does this resonate with you?
Well, I think it's, again, this is a beloved childhood toy that most people have. I had one. My mother still has one. In fact, the teddy bear that I use in this presentation is my mother's own teddy bear from when she was a small child. It has a special connection with me, and so my mom has kept that on a shelf in her bedroom her entire lifetime, and I started doing the Theodore Roosevelt shows, and I asked if I could borrow the bear for the first time that I was going to use it in a show, and she has just gifted it to me indefinitely now. That's a neat personal connection for me. As for Roosevelt, he really wasn't fond of people calling him Teddy, as it was. You know, he lived in a more formal time, and I think he considered that a nickname. As I understand it, it was perhaps the personal name, the private pet name that his first wife, Alice, called him.
Mm.
And so after he lost his first wife, after childbirth, as a very young woman, I think he didn't want to be referred to as Teddy, but Americans embraced the name Teddy from the very beginning, really. So everywhere he went, it was, hey, Teddy, welcome, Teddy. And what are you going to do? When you're such a notable personality, the President of the United States, you can't come into town and start taking personal offense at people just trying to demonstrate how much they love you.
He probably got used to it after a time.
I think he did. It probably grated on him for some while. But then when the name truly got cemented with Teddy's Bear, as it was first known, you know, by the possessive term, Teddy's Bear quickly became a national bestseller, as it were, in the toy business. And within the few years, two or three different toy companies started making versions of Teddy's Bear, and millions were sold. And so there was no way he was going to shake that name. As I understand, when his daughter Alice was married a few years later in the White House, that he actually, I don't know if he was trying to just accept the fact that he had hundreds of teddy bears brought in for the wedding and they were placed at each table.
Well, let's take a listen.
But I remained a hunter to the very end. And I hunted through my presidency. For all of my other accomplishments, I probably am most known for a failed hunting trip early in my presidency. You see, I had some political business I had to take care of down in southern Mississippi. And the governor of Mississippi invited me to go on a black bear hunt. I think he wanted to be able to brag that Mr. Roosevelt hunted and killed a black bear in Mississippi, and he wanted me to take this thing back to the White House and be the first state to supply a bear trophy to the president. So, out of my power, the governor invited dozens of other people on this hunting trip. So you could either have a picnic or a county fair or a hunting trip. You can't have both. There were dozens of us tromping around through the southern canebrakes of southern Mississippi, scared off every bear in all of the southern United States, probably. I retired back to my tent in our hunting camp when somebody came running into the camp and said, Mr. President, we have your bear, come quick. So I grabbed my rifle, my trusty Winchester 94, and off I went, thinking that we were going to follow the trail of this terrible black bear, and I was going to get my trophy after all. When what do I see when I arrive on the scene but this terrible catastrophe of these dead hunting dogs laying at the feet of this bludgeoned black bear, this old beaten grizzled black bear whom the hunting guide had beaten over the head with his rifle, tied it to a tree, and they said, Mr. Roosevelt, there's your bear! Come shoot your bear, claim your trophy. Now I founded the Boone and Crockett Club, for goodness sakes. I had promoted ethical hunting practices and fair chase. How in the world was I going to shoot a bear that had been beaten and bludgeoned, tied to a tree? So I refused. Then the next day, I saw the cartoons. And there I was in the cartoons, standing with my rifle, with my arm extended, saying, I will not shoot the bear. And instead of a ferocious, that beaten up, bludgeoned, huge black bear, tied to the tree was this cute, fuzzy little bear cub. And it captured the imagination of the American people. When I returned to the White House, there was a letter from a Mr. Morris Mictum. And he said, he operated a small little toy shop and said, my wife has started sewing up these little stuffed bears. And we wondered, might we use your name in the promotion of these bears? And I said, I can't imagine that the Roosevelt name is much good in the bear business. but be my guest, go ahead. So for all my accomplishments, as politician, as soldier, statesman, hunter, naturalist, writer of over 40 books, this is my legacy. Teddy's Bear, as it was marketed as. And I understand Mr. and Mrs. Mictum did good business.
We're back with living historian Kurt Skinner talking about his reenactments of Theodore Roosevelt. Kurt, what is your favorite presentation or reenactment to perform?
I enjoy stepping into the Rough Rider role. I've spoken particularly as focusing on Roosevelt's wartime exploits, forming the Rough Rider Regiment. That's a really neat story. There's an author outside of Colorado Springs, Mark Gardner, who wrote a really great book about the Rough Riders a couple of years ago, and I've become friends with Mark and just enjoy talking about the writing process with him and another guy that is so passionate about researching the Rough Rider aspect. That's really one of the first things that drew me into it, getting the uniform. Just there's something kind of special about stepping into Roosevelt's uniform as Colonel Theodore Roosevelt. That's pretty exciting. So talking with veterans groups or such, I've started performing here in Colorado during the summers in a role as Theodore Roosevelt in his role of protecting the bison at the Colorado Buffalo Adventures. Neil Fisher, outside of Colorado Springs in Denver. He does a buffalo show, or it's kind of a buffalo dinner theater that we do.
Oh, neat.
So people come in, they eat a good meal, and he's brought in a couple of dozen bison, and you can actually hand feed the bison alfalfa pellets.
Oh, wow.
It's exciting. I would recommend that to anyone.
They're big creatures, though, aren't they?
They are. It's impressive to be that close to a bison. But it's great fun for the kids. You know, he takes them out on a hayrack ride amongst the bison, and they feed them from the back of the trailer. I get to come in and after that, and in my role as Theodore Roosevelt, in some of the story that I told here with William Hornady and trying to round up a handful of the remaining bison in America out of Yellowstone and bringing them back, breeding them in captivity in the Bronx Zoo of all places, and then reintroducing them back into game preserves in the West. That's a neat aspect of it. The conservation side as well, I'm pretty passionate about his role in bringing conservation issues to the forefront of American life. Big advocate, obviously, of our national park and national monument system and our game refuges. So yeah, any chance I get to talk about his role in expanding the government's conservation endeavors, I do that, yeah.
You mentioned having some mentors along the way. I saw that on your website. If you don't mind, who were they and how did they help influence you?
Well, this was that venture. It's been a couple of years ago that I decided that I would try to take on the role of Theodore Roosevelt, and I found that in Medora, North Dakota, there is every summer for the last few years something that was called a gathering of TRs in Medora.
Ah.
So Medora, again, being the gateway to Theodore National Park. Medora is a small town that caters to the memory of Roosevelt and his time ranching in the Dakota Territory. The Theodore Roosevelt enactor, repriser as he styles himself, Joe Wiegand, he gave up his day job in the early 2000s and went on the road, and he took on TR as a full-time gig.
Oh, wow.
He's been doing that for very many years now. Matter of fact, he was invited in 2008, in the last days of George W. Bush's presidency, to come and speak at the sesquicentennial of the birth of Theodore Roosevelt in the White House. And so Joe became Theodore Roosevelt, I think, for a lot of people, and very generous guy. It's not a competition amongst Theodore Roosevelts, but it's just a group of like-minded men who want to honor Roosevelt's memory. And the way that we do that is dressing up as Roosevelt and trying to take on that role. And so Joe, several years ago, started up, hey, let's start bringing people together for a weekend in Medora in the summers. And let's talk about this common thing that we enjoy doing. And this year, it's styled as a Chautauqua, which is a thematic weekend. And so this summer, I'll be performing Theodore Roosevelt at the Badlands Chautauqua in Medora in July. My role will be Theodore Roosevelt running for the New York governorship in 1898. It's there that I met a couple other guys who've been doing Theodore Roosevelts for some time, Larry Marple and his wife Julia. They do Mr. and Mrs. Theodore Roosevelt together. Great couple, very generous in their time. Gib Young has been the Theodore Roosevelt of Mount Rushmore for a number of years. He's there in the summer times, just very generous again with their time. So yeah, I would count all of those men as mentors. Because this is, again, it's something that we share in common. It's not a competition. We each do it differently. I met a woman this morning at breakfast who saw me last night, and she said, "Hey, I saw a Theodore Roosevelt in Denver a few years ago, and he was completely different than what you did last night." And so I had to pause, and that could mean more than one thing.
Right.
But she said, "But yours was terrific, and you know, I loved the way that you concentrated on conservation issues." And so yeah, we can all bring something different, and we integrate some of our own personality into it, but still try to be true to the man. It's a brotherhood of reprisers that all have that common thing, and that we want to bring respect and more interest to Theodore Roosevelt, the man, and his accomplishments.
Nice. I understand you even have a Theodore Roosevelt Association?
There is. The TRA was started, the Theodore Roosevelt Association was started right after his death in 1919. He died at the age of 60, and it took the world quite by surprise for Roosevelt to die so young. I'm not sure if people just imagined how Roosevelt would go out, but they just imagined, I think, that he would live so much longer. And so to perpetuate his memory, this association was formed and based in Sagamore Hill. Theodore Roosevelt's wife, Edith, continued to live in Sagamore Hill, their home in Long Island, for a number of years, I think into the 1950s. And when she died, it was taken over and is now part of the National Park System. They've celebrated the 100 years of an association dedicated to perpetuating this man's memory. And on the board of directors, there's Tweed Roosevelt, who's been the head for a number of years of that association.
Where are you available, Kurt, to do these presentations?
I am still a history teacher, but I'm scaling back to part-time next year, hoping that I can turn this Theodore Roosevelt avocation into perhaps not full-time, but it'll make me more available if I start to scale back my teaching load.
Okay.
I have primarily been performing just within this Intermountain, Rocky Mountain region, but I would happily start to expand my territory, and I'd be pleased to do more types of presentations, I think, with the Park Service and with the monuments and with the wildlife refuges.
Do groups actually hire you to do this? How does it work?
So it is a performance, and you know, we typically try to work within the budget of the group, which can vary greatly. You can have more corporate events, which obviously they have more money that they're able to spend and can often bring hundreds of people in. If it's a larger paying audience, then perhaps there's a larger budget. There can be smaller groups, especially if it's more local. I'm working with a Boy Scout group in a couple of weeks, and that'll be a smaller occasion, but I want to be able to work within people's budgets.
So the best thing to do is probably reach out to you through your website, which is
TeddyRooseveltsAmerica.com. There's a contact page on the website there. Yeah, just send me a memo on there and your information, and I'll get back to you within that day and love to talk some details with groups that may have me.
Very good. And again, that contact information will be on this podcast page as well. Well, again, we appreciate you coming down to the Monte Vista Crane Festival here doing your presentation. It was very, very enjoyable. Certainly, I urge people, if you have a chance, go see Kurt Skinner doing Teddy Roosevelt's America. It's certainly worth the time to go see that. Kurt, we want to thank you for coming by the SL Voices studio, talking to us about what you do. We wish you the best of luck, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Adam. It's been delightful.
Colorado-based historian and Theodore Roosevelt reenactor Kurt Skinner takes audiences of all ages back to a time when Theodore Roosevelt embodied all the promises of the new American century. Kurt captures the vigor, energy, and enthusiasm of the Spanish-American War hero that became America's youngest president. It's informative, inspiring, patriotic, and entertaining, something you don't want to miss. All of Kurt's programs can be tailored to specific grade levels, group interests, and more, focusing on such areas as U.S. history, geography, government and citizenship, character and values, conservation, and the natural world. If you would like more information or to book Kurt Skinner at your next event, go to TeddyRooseveltsAmerica.com. That's TeddyRooseveltsAmerica.com. Or you can email roughridertr@gmail.com. That's roughridertr@gmail.com.
The views and opinions expressed by the San Luis Valley Voices podcast guests are solely their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or beliefs of SL Voices, its staff, members, their respective parent company, or affiliates. The information provided is for educational, informational, or entertainment purposes only. The guests' opinions are based on information they consider reliable, but neither SL Voices nor its parent companies or affiliates warrant its completeness or accuracy. as all voices will not be held responsible or liable in any way for the information or opinions expressed by guests of this or any other San Luis Valley Voices podcast.
We appreciate you telling your friends to listen to the podcast on slvoices.com and check out our extensive calendar of events. More listings in one location than any other website around. You can help spread the word too by joining our Facebook group, SL Voices, Your Voice in the San Luis Valley, and liking our posts on other social media outlets. Also, check out our Instagram page for behind-the-scenes looks at what we do. And please patronize our local sponsors. Remember to support the businesses here in the Valley. Most are owned and operated by your family, friends, and neighbors. We all love this area, want to see it flourish, and you can help by buying and supporting locally in your own and surrounding communities. Check back for another local podcast soon. Until then, this has been San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley.